Chichenina. Is the 255th program of the Indians for Indians Hour. Keshkikai speaking. Theoretically, this program is coming to you from Shalako, good old Shalako. Actually, due to the fact that we were unable to get a satisfactory leased wire connection out to the campus, we loaded up a couple of cars full of speakers and came down to Ponca City, where, through the courtesy and kindness of Miss Adelaide Carell, owner and manager of station WBBZ, here in Ponca City, we're using its studio to originate this program. Being limited in time, it is absolutely impossible to bring you even a small percentage of the good speakers who are present at the Intertribal Council, a fact which I sincerely regret. What we have done is to select those who can give you the best general picture of what's taking place. Of course, we're going to have to sort of limit them. And we're going to start off here with Judge Earl Welch. Most of you know Judge Welch. He's a judge of the state Supreme Court, and he's past and present chairman of the Oklahoma Intertribal Council. Now, Judge Welch, I think it would be proper for you to tell these Indians to listen in something about what the Tribal Council's doing.
Yes, Don, the Indian people of Oklahoma are having a great meeting at Shalako these 3 days. In attendance are Indians from many counties of the state and representing nearly 30 Indian tribes. A large number of Indians of the full blood, also a large number are mixed blood Indians. A very impressive part of the program is furnished by the full-blood Indians. Each one of them is deeply interested in the affairs and progress of his tribe and of the men, women, and children of that tribe. And let me assure you, such an Indian earnestly thinking and speaking of his experiences and his rights and claims and his hopes is quite interesting and most impressive. Another outstanding feature of this meeting is the setting at Shalako. There is a fine educational institution. Many fine buildings, dozens of them, of native stone, quarried from the land of the school itself, beautiful buildings, and buildings of service to hundreds of young Americans each year, and to thousands of them during the nearly 70 years of this school's work. Shalako is older than nearly all schools of Oklahoma. It has a campus, one of the biggest in the world, over 8,000 acres, owned and operated in teaching that part of the complete program which deals with farming and stock raising. Well, with the place and these people, it is a fine meeting. We're working today on the program set up by the committee. First, the Indians are principally interested in the bill in Congress creating the Indian Claims Commission, House Resolution 4497. The bill has passed the House and is pending in the National Senate. Its purpose is to obtain a final hearing, determination, and settlement of numerous claims of Indians as to lands and money settlements. Based on long-ago treaties and acts and transactions of the past four decades or more, many such claims are based upon solid facts, provable facts, when full and fair chance is given, while some claims may be asserted which are based more on fanciful tradition or on facts thought to exist but which cannot be proved. It is the purpose through the Claims Commission to furnish an overall chance and all-embracing opportunity that these claims be investigated and heard to the end, finally, that those claims which have positive merit, in whole or in part, may not longer be denied, but shall now be fixed and now be paid. Matters of Indian schools and hospitals and various other problems engage the attention of this meeting. It's an honor to me and to each one of us to be present and to help the Indians of Oklahoma in this meeting, and Don, it really is a fine meeting.
Thank you, Judge Welch. Now, folks, here's an old friend of mine. I've been trying to get him to come up and sing songs on this program for a long time, but I couldn't. I finally got him up to the microphone, but he's going to make a speech. I'm talking about Jesse Rowlodge, Arapaho. He's a member of the Cheyenne and Arapaho Tribal Committee and the official representative of both tribes is practically every place. Isn't that right, Jess?
That's right, Mr.
What are you going to tell these folks about?
Well, what I will say, Mr. Whistler, will be generally to the interest of my full-blood Indians, especially of the Western Reservations.
That's fine, Jess.
I seem to know more about that than I do anything else. In fact, that's my lifetime service, I feel, and I think that's the subject that I shall speak on. Radio listeners and Indian friends, good afternoon. As you know, I'm your representative here at the Shalako meeting, and especially this afternoon, participating in the broadcast from Ponca City here, thinking I would let you know just what is going on. So I accepted the participation of this radio broadcast for Indians, the Indian Hour. I think that you well remember my position in your interest and welfare, especially of the Western tribes of the state, and that is this. I really represent and have great interest in the welfare of the old, unrestricted, uneducated, incompetent Indians, interest and welfare. In all the meetings that I attend, usually where you sent me as your delegate, that is always my position. That is my position today and tomorrow at the Shalako Conference of the Oklahoma State Indian Council, which is cooperating with the interests of the National Council of American Indians. We are discussing upon problems that you are vitally interested in. Those problems which confront you with your life problems that you think are more important than anything else as far as your rights are concerned. By that I mean that as restricted Indians, having certain rights and denied certain rights as restricted Indians from government supervision viewpoint, I feel that I would not do my duty if I didn't express myself in your behalf. And I think the other full-blood and restricted reservation Indians feel the same as I do. Before we left Shalako at noon hour, we were discussing about educational features and the maintenance and retention and preservation of boarding schools, as well as improving our interests in day schools. I hadn't got to speak yet on that subject because there were other speakers that were before me, and so this afternoon, if that is to be continued, I intend to express myself as to what the Cheyenne Rappos especially think of day schools as and the government boarding schools on their particular reservation. I think for the last few years, the western part of the state throughout our reservation has been somewhat interested in the attendance of the Cheyenne Rappo children, as well as other tribes, I suppose, for one or two reasons. One of them is that I have noticed is the desire of the school faculties in admitting Indian children on account of their athletic ability. Probably lots of you remember the natural ability of especially Cheyenne Rapos in athletics, and also the interest that the teachers and faculties have in the natural ability of Indian children in artistic work. Some of them has become good artists without ever studying art. And I think those features, as well as music, is one reason why the schools are so willing to admit Indian children in public schools. However, I think that it's the interest of the Indians in general to retain their government boarding schools on account of several reasons. And I think those reasons you know quite well. So it's those problems that I'm participating in discussing at this meeting for your interest and other problems, of course. I think one of them is your leasing problems. And I know you know that pretty well, and I need not to speak further on it. I thank you.
Thank you, Jess Rowlodge. The next time you come to this microphone, I'm going to have you sing a song. Jess says he thinks he'd have to learn one, but I'll bet he wouldn't. If Jess was an old friend of mine, this next gentleman I was going to talk to you was a very, very new one because I just met him last night. In fact, we had the same room together and tried to outsnore one another. This fellow's James H. Belvin. He's a Choctaw. He lives down in Durant. He's the county superintendent of schools, Bryan County. And he's the president of the Choctaw Chickasaw Confederation of Bryan County. James, since you're interested in education in general, why don't you give us your opinion on Indian education now in particular?
Thank you, Don. good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience. As vice chairman of this Indian Council today, I would like to express to you the one point in the platform that the platform committee promulgated for our observation and attention. I quote, "We favor, for the time being, retention of the Federal Indian Schools of Oklahoma, and at the same time advocate the placing of Indian children in the public schools wherever possible." We were pursuing that thought just at the noon hour when we had to recess before we took any further action upon just exactly what the Indians thought with reference to that plank in our platform. But from the trends of the conversation, I should say that if that is put to a vote or we leave it up to a resolution, that there will be a great majority of the Indians, both the mixed bloods and the full bloods, in favor of that plank in our platform. That is, let me say that again, we favor for the time being retention of the Federal Indian Schools of Oklahoma and at the same time advocate the placing of Indian children in the public schools wherever possible. As one directly concerned with education of the masses, I would like to say this, that we believe that education and spiritual culture are the saving graces of any people. Our schools must fit the Indians into the economic, industrial, and political life of the nation. Then, pursuing that thought, I would like to say this, that if the Indians are really to become amalgamated among the whites, and we've got to compete with the white people, then it is necessary to put into his hands the tools that he must use in carving out his destiny. Education and spiritual culture are the saving graces of any people. Then I should say that our educational system, both for the Indians and the whites, is very far from being adequate. One thing is that people are more or less indifferent, that is, a good many are, toward mass education. We need a more adequate compulsory education law. And here I would like to say that the Oklahoma legislature should consider a more adequate education, a compulsory education law. And I'd like to say this, that I'm on the committee of the OEA Legislative Committee in which we have drafted an educational bill. That is one which we think will take care of this inadequate education to the extent that will force all of the boys and girls of school age in the public schools. Of course, that will take in the Indians, especially those who have allotted their lands in severalty, or those who are tenant Indians and not on the reservations. That will put them into school with the boys and girls, that is, with the white boys and girls. Now then, of course, on the in the reservation schools, that is, I should rather say, on the reservation, there we have a different proposition. I think, though, that we should do this. Share the recommendations that I would like to leave with you. this adequate compulsory education law would put all the boys and girls in school of school age. Then they should we should establish vocational and trades in these schools in order that the boys and girls may learn some trade that they might apply when they're out in public life. Then, of course, we should not forget religious training. I'm quoting again, that education and spiritual culture are the saving graces of any people. Leaving this thought with you, let us say this. Send us, teachers and missionaries, men and women consecrated to the great task remaining before us, men and women who will bring about that leavening influence of him who died on the cross, bringing forth the idea and closing his prophecy, that, and I, if I am lifted up from the earth, was all men unto me.
1894. And for 4 years after that, in 1898. You ought to know something about that program, then, that school, hadn't you?
Yes, sir. I attended there 4 years. I understand that some 60 or 70 years ago, this Chilocco Indian School was established. And during the years that has passed from that time to the present, there has been Indian students that attended there that's gone out from that institution, something like 25 or 30,000 students, Indian youth. To those of you who had the part in establishing the Indian school at Chilocco, Oklahoma, as well as others interested in the Indian education, to you is extended the unexpressible gratitude for your untiring efforts in the educating of our Indian youth. To you, the recipients of this great opportunity of acquiring some knowledge of the facilities offered at Chilocco, also to you who are the products of those things which Chilocco should and shall be proud of. As a product, as a representative of the institution, to you should have the privilege, the honor of extending the facilities in which you have acquired there and put it to practical use. With all these education, the most important is the religious education. I will say this, that throughout the country, in our land and other nations, there is a tendency of being alarmed as to the youth or the juvenile delinquency. I say this much, that this education should start at the homes. In this home is akin to those things that God has given to mankind, and to make it a possible way for a rightful citizen, that we should be, these religious education should come first in all things that we undertake to learn and to act. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Harry. And now our next speaker is a gentleman I've known quite a while, and like Jesse, I haven't been able to get him up in front of a microphone. So it gives me great pleasure this time to introduce Reverend White Parker. He is the son of the famous Comanche Chief Quanah Parker. White, what do you want to tell these Indians listening today?
Thanks, Don. I want to speak on the many adjustments that we had to make as Indian people. And I want to touch on a treatise about Indian people with a white man. The Indian of yesterday, in regard to a treaty with a white man, was asked to sign by holding a pen and making a cross mark. And that was his signature. And the Indian had faith in the white man when he signed by making a cross. He was sincere. He was honest. And it is well known that the words have the power of concealing as well as revealing. And because of that concealing of the white man, millions of acres of our land in Oklahoma and elsewhere has passed from the hands of the Indian
to the white man. The Indian had appealed to his great father in Washington because of the loss of their land. But in the long run, the Indian was defeated on all these points. Today, our forefathers, who have not realized these benefits for which they had fought, they lie asleep. And now it has passed on to us. And it is a great honor and a privilege and opportunity which we have today. Our daughters and our sons, in regard to the World War I and II, have answered the call of their great country, the great United States. And they have made one of the greatest contributions to winning the war because of our language. Just like I would say now in my native language, some of the listeners, particularly the white people and some of the Indians, would not understand. When I would say, I am happy to have a part in this program. But we have come to know the English language, and we are learning every day. And so those boys and girls of our Indian people, some of them lies asleep in the foreign fields. Back in 1924, Congress declared the Indians of Oklahoma as citizens. And as we look into the past, and as we look into the future of our Indians, and their interests, and the welfare of the Indians of Oklahoma and other Indians, we have come to realize because of the contribution of the white man. And the contribution of the white man is civilization, education, Christianity. Therefore, we as Indian people from the time of the opening of our Indian country had to make many adjustments. We had to relive our life again according to the white man's way of thinking. So today we have this hope for the future. As we look into the future, our hope lies in our National Congress of American Indians. And I am proud to say that we have wonderful leaders, and I have this small part in making this contribution. Thank you.
Thank you, Reverend White Parker. Now our next speaker is Judge N.B. Johnson. He's Cherokee, he's judge of the 12th Judicial District, and he's also president of the Congress of American Indians. Judge Johnson.
Thank you, Don. It's a privilege and a pleasure to meet on the campus of this beautiful Chilocco Indian School, a school which belongs to all the Indians of Oklahoma. To meet here with our fellow tribesmen and try to work out some of the many problems that confront us. The question has been asked many times, what is the National Congress of American Indians? On November the 19th, 1944, Indian delegates from 27 states, representing more than 50 Indian tribes, met at Denver, Colorado, and organized the National Congress of American Indians, adopted an all-tribal constitution, and formally launched the organization for members of their race in an effort to bring all Indians together for the purpose of enlightening the public, preserving Indian cultural values, to seek an equitable adjustment of tribal affairs, and to secure and preserve their rights under Indian treaties with the United States and streamline the administration of Indian affairs in keeping with the current needs of the Indians. The American Indian tribes, having struggled through the last century to obtain recognition and justice for their rights and their claims against the government, and having failed to do so, have at last been driven to the necessity of associating themselves together in a group movement. For several years, Indians all over the country have realized the necessity for forming an organization through which Indian thought might be crystallized and the adjustment of the many problems confronting them might receive the attention and action of Indians, and plans for their solution and adjustment might be made for their common good. The National Congress of American Indians was established by and sponsored wholly by Indians who were inspired by an earnest desire to better the status of their people, and it has no connection whatever with any agency or branch of the federal government. It is independent in thought and action. The second annual convention was held at Browning, Montana in October 1945, where we spent four profitable days among the Indians of the Northwest. There were delegates from 17 states representing more than 40 tribes of Indians. The gathering presented a fair cross-section of Indian population. There were old and young, full bloods, mixed bloods, educated and uneducated, Indians from allotted areas and others from reservations, Indians from the humble walks of life, and others who held high positions with the state and federal government. It was clearly demonstrated at this convention that full bloods and mixed bloods alike were dissatisfied with many phases of the government's administration of Indian affairs. Resolutions were passed directing that immediate steps be taken to call these matters to the attention of the proper agencies and to adopt measures to remedy them. Among other things, it was urged upon Congress and the administrative branch that it adopt a policy not to enact legislation and regulations affecting the Indians without first consulting them through their representatives. Preparations are being made for the third annual convention, which will be held in August in Oklahoma, where more than one-third of all Indians live. If the Indian Congress is to realize its purposes, it must have the influence and support of its white friends, as well as the cooperation of all Indian tribes, and must extend its membership to all parts of the country. Only through the concerted efforts of Indians and their friends everywhere can the organization gain influence and strength sufficient to accomplish its goal.
Thank you, Judge Johnson, and thank each one of you for coming here today and addressing this radio audience of the Indians for Indians Hour. In closing, I wish to thank Mrs. Correll and the staff of the station WBBZ here in Ponca City for making it possible to bring you this program by remote control. And so until next week, this is Keshki Kai saying, and hey, Nakata, hey!
Ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard Indians for Indians with Don Whistler. WNAD, the broadcasting service of your State University of Oklahoma in Norman. The correct Central Standard Time in exactly 5 seconds, 1:30 p.m. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's a brand new show, styled especially for you who are interested in your own state university. Yes, The Professor Interrogates is a program about the University of Oklahoma. And if you listen regularly throughout these months of June and July, we're sure that you'll learn much about the University of Oklahoma. Well, that's just about enough for me. The next thing in order is to call the class to attention and hand you over to the professor himself.
Thank you, Jack Carver. Yes, the title of our program does sound a little pedagogical, but I think we'll get along famously. So if you pull your chairs up closer to the radio, I'll tell you all about the pattern of our little show. It's new, you know, and it's a lot of fun. I'm going to ask a question on a topic pertaining to some phase of our own university here at Norman. Then after I...